Spoiler in time. This is a show that is paid for by the hard work we do on Cord Killers, where we try to figure out these streaming services and boxes and all that stuff. And then we get to watch things and we get to talk about them here. This week, we're going to talk about the Larry Sanders show. Not the Larry Sanders show. Totally different show. Not talking about that. We're talking about Larry Sanders show, episodes 2 and 3 of season 3. The Outsider season 1, episode 10, the finale. And the 3rd episode of season 5 of Better Call Saul. I'm Tom Merritt. He's you're not Brian Brushwood.
No, I'm Bryce Castillo.
Hi, that's Irvin. Right. As long as it starts with Bry, it's anyone legal. Can do that part of the job.
That's right.
That's the stipulation. Brian's sick.
He's sick.
He's alive. He's fine. Don't worry about him. I mean, worry a little bit. Just the appropriate amount.
He's okay. I wouldn't call him fine, Tom. He's
bring him
sick.
Some soup.
Yeah. Everybody bring him
soup. If he was fine, he'd be doing the show. But he's not dying.
Yeah. Bring him your thoughts and prayers. How about that?
Send him your thoughts and prayers. On Twitter, @Schwood, thoughts and prayers. That's all you need to say. If every one of you says that, he'll get better.
That's right.
It's science.
That's how it works.
All right. But Bryce is going to talk about some of the shows we won't talk about because Brian's not here. One of the shows we will talk about, but we'll probably want to talk about it again when Brian does get back. But let's start by talking about Better Call Saul, episode 3, which kind of just blended in. For me, did it for you? Like mm-hmm. This one didn't necessarily stand out. It felt like just a continuation.
Right. It felt like, I mean, it was a continuation. I mean, it picked up exactly from last episode. Like especially the opening shot. Can we talk about the opening shot for a second, Tom, with the ants?
Yeah, actually, that's a good idea.
That I am not like a creepy crawly gets squeaked out by seeing ants, but that the scene and the sound design just it was long enough and there was just enough ants that it just made me go, okay, please take it off my screen now. Please take it off my screen now. But it's also
I feel like I was like, okay, this is really cool cinematography. Probably some CGI.
Not CGI'd.
No? Okay. So it's excellent cinematography.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, setting the tone for, you know, this kind of thing happens in Albuquerque with ants, which is true. And I guess it's in a way a metaphor.
It is.
For, you know, if there's a piece of the pie, everybody wants a piece of that pie, or in this case, ice cream.
No good ice really cream gets left unbugged.
It felt self-indulgent. It felt like somebody realized that they could do this. And shot it. And then they're like, we'll totally open an episode with that. Great idea.
I do think coming back to it at the end of the episode when they finally dropped Jimmy back off was overkill. I thought they didn't need to like drop him off at the exact same spot. And he makes this point of looking at it and going, my ice cream. Like, I thought that was a little much.
I guess the ice cream of my hopes and dreams has been eaten by ants. Oh, well. I mean, I get like if you're going to spend that much time on setting it up, you want to pay off. I'm just not sure the payoff really worked for me, but it was cool cinematography though. I can't deny that was really good.
A very cool thing to do. It's supposedly in their podcast, the show's podcast about it. They talk about it a bit. It was pretty neat. Also, we're talking about stunts, a little bit of stunt casting. We got to see, Hank and Gomez, old Gomi back.
Gomez back, yeah. I know if Brian were here, he'd want to bring up how they look different than they did in Breaking Bad.
They are markedly older because they are literally older, yeah.
But I really just ignored that. And I was like, it's Hank and Gomi. You know, that's really all I care about.
And it was good to see them back again. It was good to see their dynamic. I mean, like, they have a dynamic. They chew the scene with each other and... they work off of each other in a way that I guess it could have been any DEA agent, though I saw some stuff online about like why it actually should have been Hank and Gomi, because the person that they interview is named in Breaking Bad, or the person that person comes back in Breaking Bad as a small CI.
Yeah. And this is the setup of him as a CI, and it is brokered by Saul Goodman. That whole scenario where he's told, hey, I hear you're the guy for this. We're going to have you do it. kind of explain, like, this is what I've been waiting for, is how does he become Saul Goodman? How does he become the guy who has a secret stash of phones, who knows all the criminals? How does he become that guy? Because what we did with Better Call Saul was establish that while Slippin' Jimmy was a little bit shady, Jimmy McGill is a good guy. And it wasn't enough for him to be kind of a con artist in his past to explain how he becomes the lawyer to the crime syndicate families of Albuquerque. And this is it. This is how he becomes, because he got a name on the street. He knows the industry well because he worked for a prestigious law firm. And so he's got skills, and he got maneuvered into a position where he couldn't get out of it. And it's just, you can tell, here we go. This is, it's just going to snowball from here.
And it makes sense. I mean, that's what would happen, right? It's not like you get a clean out just because you did your time and you did your job. Like, no, you're going to be on the hook for these people forever, for the rest of your life. Which, you know, gives more weight to all the black and white, you know, flash forward stuff from the season end caps. I think what was really especially interesting is seeing Saul get in, just very easily flow into it. He is like, he's game, even for this stuff where he's not sure that he's game. He's good at what he does, and yeah, he is going with the flow, which
he doesn't want to do this, but he knows how.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And Kim is kind of in the same position. I think we're seeing a parallel story where, like Jimmy, she's being sucked into some stuff based on her previous decisions regarding Mesa Verde. And even though she has this ideal of, oh, I just want to do pro bono work, and Jimmy just wanted to be a lawyer, because of some decisions she made, she's being sucked into becoming a vicious corporate lawyer. And this episode points to the idea that there's no escaping it. And I love that scene at the end where they're just throwing beer bottles out of frustration because they both have sort of met their fate.
Yeah. It's interesting to see that our four protagonists between Jimmy and Nacho, Mike and Kim, that all of them are being tested in terms of how valiant can they be in their line of work. And when being very successful and being making money and moving up goes hand in hand with doing bad, doing corrupt work, cutting corners, yeah, whatever you want to call it. And I think that is hinting at where our four characters are going to be. We know Jimmy stays as Saul and goes through Breaking Bad. We don't know what happened to Kim. We don't know what happened to Nacho, but we know Mike, and Mike is also in the thick of it in Breaking Bad, which kind of makes me think Nacho and Kim just get out. Like, I know we thought, like, oh, maybe Kim dies, maybe there's a death thing because she's not in Breaking Bad, but maybe she just goes clean. Maybe she's not in it because she...
I think it's harder for me to swallow that Nacho gets out.
I mean, but that scene with his dad this episode, right? Like, he really wants his dad's approval.
It's going to be hard for him to get out, though, without dying.
I mean, unless he's got the vacuum thing, unless he's got a...
Every time he tries to get out, they pull him back. Just made that up. I think Kim might not die, but she might just do what... Like, the parallel would be Jimmy doesn't want to be a bad guy lawyer, but he's going to have to be. And that, we know that's where he ends up, with a huge thing of the Constitution behind him, because that's where he has to go. Maybe Kim ends up having to be a corporate lawyer.
Oh, and she's just stuck in a building. That's why we never see her. Yeah. She's a goodie two-shoes. You know,
and maybe she even gets transferred to like New York or London or something crazy like that.
Better Call Kim, series 3. Yeah. Okay.
We didn't talk a lot about Mike, but there's not a lot to talk about here. He gets drunk and makes the guy take down a postcard of the Sydney Opera House. Oh, that bothers
him. Yeah. Though the next week on hints that there might be some more Mike stuff this week. Because remember,
and he breaks a thug's arm who tries to rob him.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe that'll come back to haunt him.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. I wonder with what's up with Mike, because I think he is very adamantly against going down this path. But he, I think even more than Saul, is very comfortable with it in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, honestly, they're all Breaking Bad. Nacho's kind of already broke bad, but Mike, Jimmy, Kim, they're all Breaking Bad,
mm-hmm.
in one way or another. With Kim, it's corporate bad. Yeah. It's white collar bad, but it's a different, you know.
What did you think about Kim's story with the guy who wouldn't want to give up his house?
Yeah, poor man's Brian Ibbett.
it was heartbreaking because, like,
I mean, it was really well done because you sympathize with the guy, but you also know, like, come on, dude, look around. All the other houses are gone. Like, yeah. why are you holding on to this? And then you see Kim do the thing that would be like, treat him like a human, that should work. And he calls her insincere, and you can kind of see why. Like, oh, you might just say anything to get what you want, huh? Yeah. So I mean,
she offers to help move this dude's stuff.
Yeah.
She's like, pick a day next week and I will help you get all your stuff moved out.
Although
that's insanity. What lawyer would do that?
They're not
going
to close on a house in time for her to help move. It's a bit of an empty problem. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I also see why he's looking at her like, you're just a corporate person who'll say whatever you want. Like, I don't believe you. Why should I believe you?
Yeah.
Nobody's in the right in that situation. And that's a nice complex thing. I like that.
Yeah. I felt bad. I mean, I felt bad that she went back the second time and he rebuffed her, but I also just feel bad that she even went back the second time at all. I think, I don't know. It's friction in her character development to be waffling between, you know, she's going to be tough Boston Legal or she's going to be like Kim Wexler, human.
Yeah. No, I think she's going to get swept up into the corporate world and just not be able to ignore it or escape it. Yeah.
Good show. I'm excited about it, though.
Yeah, me too. I'm enjoying it. Here's a show you can't enjoy anymore because it's over, unless you haven't watched it yet. That's The Outsider. It is done for the season. And it's a mini series. It's not expected to have more seasons. It's just based on the book.
I have not seen promotion calling it a mini series. In fact, IMDb even like didn't put an end year on it. I don't know. Anyway, sorry, Tom.
I mean, this is based on the book and they've done the book as far as I understand, although I haven't read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wikipedia calls it a mini series.
Oh, okay. Well,
I don't know. Weird. That's Wikipedia, though. You can say anything there.
Yeah.
They can call it a clown.
Because I know when HBO did The Night Of, which was also from Richard Price, they called it a miniseries, like specifically.
Well, I think when it's 10 episodes, you don't call it a miniseries on HBO. And The Night Of had how many episodes?
Oh, maybe it didn't have as many. Okay. Yeah. Well, then maybe that's the case.
So let's talk about the show itself, which I kept waiting for another shoe to drop and they're like, nope, that's all the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they got into the cave, I'm going to skip past the gunfight because that was a great gunfight,
yeah.
But not a lot of suspense there. So, you know, the people are going to die. We know it's not going to be, Holly and what's his name? Face, Jack.
Yes. No, Ralph.
Ralph, Holly and Ralph. And so they corner the monster in the cave. And we know that the monster is super clever and has lived for a long time. And he's going to have a plan. And the plan is to collapse the cave on him. But then Claude comes down. And as soon as Claude's shot, because they spent that moment with the monster sort of given a look, I thought, oh, he was able to switch bodies. And then he shot the other body. And now he's out there. And that turned out, no, not to be the case. And then you see the monster kind of changing into a bunch of different people. And then Ralph smashes his head. And Holly's looking on. It's weird. And then we're like, okay, well, there's going to be another shoe drop. And instead, we just get this long epilogue where they, you know, they go back and they clear Terry's name. And they give Terry's wife a story. And well, everything's fine. And the credits roll. And you're like, well, I guess that's all the shoes. Then there was one more shoe.
I can't believe that they did this, Tom. I thought like
it's a very small shoe.
There we go. Written by Richard Price. Let's call it a night and close the browser window.
And that's what's so beautiful about it is I was like, man, I don't know if I don't think I'm disappointed, but I guess that's it. And then the credits roll and you're like, well, that's it. Mm-hmm. And then if you didn't stick around, folks, there is a post scene with Holly Gibney just doing a little research. Mm-hmm. And you see that she's got a scratch.
She's got a scratch. Oh. And she's checking her neck for boils.
And she's feeling her neck a little bit.
On paper, all of that you would do if you wanted to do more stories with Holly Gibney or more stories with Ralph or something.
Yeah. And I guess maybe they will. They could. Also, anyway, but Holly Gibney's in more than just this book. So
oh, she possible. Is.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. But the content of that scene, that mid-credit scene, was not like, oh, El Cuco is still alive, or El Cuco.
No,
it's all just,
I mean,
like,
his head got pretty smashed, but then I don't know. He's,
does it have
an
a head?
Immortal supernatural being. Maybe yeah. He can just grow a new head.
And so it just made me, like, between that and then Holly, when they're in the cave, when she looks at Ralph and she says, "Who's Terry Maitland?" Like, why? Do you understand why she said that, Tom? Because that was,
who's Terry?
Yeah, she said, "Who's Terry?" That seemed insane to me that was,
and then you never acknowledged it.
Never acknowledged.
Yeah.
Tom, are they trying to do something to me? Are they trying to do? Are they?
I think they're trying to do something to us.
I would like if Holly, especially if there are, I guess if Holly Gibney is in more Stephen King books. I mean, Cynthia Erivo, who plays her, is great. She seems like a very cool character, but.
Holly Gibney was in the Bill Hodges trilogy of novels. That was turned into a TV series, Mr. Mercedes, which was on the Audience Network in 2017.
Oh, the Audience Network. See, I was out in the, I was watching the Concession Network when that was airing.
Yeah, I was watching the Backstage Network. So I didn't see it. So, I mean, I don't know if that means they go and do Bill Hodges or if they just create new stories and El Cuco continues. I don't know. That was intriguing. I can't decide. I'm not going to lie. At the moment I loved it. I jumped up and down and Eileen was like, "When did she get close to him?" I'm like, "She leaned over him and stuck the knife in him. We didn't see, but he could have scratched her then." Leaves so many questions.
And Ralph Part makes a point. Like, Ralph makes a point to stick his hand with the knife.
Yeah.
Maybe I we missed it. Maybe
kind of liked leaving it where it was. We're like, they beat El Cuco. That's the end. But then I really did love it when they gave me one more shoe.
Yeah, it was a little just weird. Why does Ralph just not tell her, like, oh, actually, I think it's not dead yet? Did he not tell her that?
Well, maybe because she says who's Terry, and he's like, oh. I don't know what's going on with that. So let me just take care of this.
Oh, so maybe he thought it was like a thrall thing.
Yeah.
Oh. That would make some sense on paper that he thought, mm-hmm. because he did also have the vision of the kids.
Right.
And okay.
And she didn't.
She didn't. Okay. Weird. I don't need stuff spelled out for me, but no, this is weird. This is some weird stuff.
Yeah. It gives you a lot to think about. So,
but overall, like, Outsider is pretty good. I mean, except for the two episodes or so in the middle that kind of nothing happened, I think is a very solid season.
Yeah. Agreed. I think this is definitely a season to binge. This, you know, watching it binging at the first half when I was catching up was really fun. Not as fun to have to wait week to week, not just because you have to wait, but like it was. The episodes definitely dragged a little more. I didn't have a problem with those two episodes that you were talking about because I was in the binge mode
right
at that point.
Right. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on The Outsider?
No, I hope that they let sleeping dogs lie. I'll just say.
Yeah, I mean, even with the questions that it raises, it's fine to just be like, and you can decide what you think that means.
Yeah,
I'm cool with that. All right, let's talk about Larry Sanders' show. You're Having My Baby and Would You Do Me a Favor? You're Having My Baby is where the woman from Montana claims that Larry got her pregnant. And he's fighting this in the press and whether he should acknowledge it on the show. And Mimi Rogers comes back. And now he's single and he wants to date Mimi Rogers finally, but she's weirded out by this. And then Would You Do Me a Favor is really mostly about Beverly not feeling appreciated and his dad coming to visit and Larry not feeling appreciated by his dad. And then he puts it all together. Then that's why.
Yeah, I thought Would You Do Me a Favor especially offered a lot of character development for Larry in terms of like, oh, I actually like have deficiencies and I understand them completely because I have those issues with my father. And I thought like the button joke at the end where he goes to Janine Garofalo and says, hey, I can't buy her flowers and I can't ask her to buy herself flowers every week, but can you do it? Like, just even without the like whole ATM pin password thing, I thought it was a very fun, a very fun resolution to that story. And I think the story and the conflict were good.
Yeah. The guy who played his father was also Doc Haywood on Twin Peaks, a very avuncular, you know, grandfatherly, lovable, you know, old man of the town on Twin Peaks, and a real jerk in Larry Sanders. Like, so nothing like, lovable about him.
Yeah. It, like, I mean, obviously this is the reason, but tone deaf to the point of like, what do you know what you know how you're acting? Do you even recognize it? But then that's obviously the same issue Larry's assistant has with Larry. So Beverly.
Yeah, yeah, with Beverly. And so yeah, I actually really liked Would You Do Me a Favor? You're Having My Baby was fine.
It was
okay. It doesn't stick out of my mind because it was kind of a running joke, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and you knew, at least I did, that he wasn't admitting the whole truth, that he didn't necessarily father a baby with this woman, but he did something that would let her have leverage over him or that wouldn't have gotten this far.
Yeah. The fact that he was so adamant, like, no, I did not sleep with her and it can't be.
I did
be
not
my
sleep
kid.
With that woman, of course, very current in June 1994.
And then the payoff of like, oh yeah, it was actually a hand job at Denny's, and I actually thought all the interactions with his lawyer were great scenes in terms
of Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah. Wait, was that Bob?
Yeah. Oh no. His lawyer was actually Sam Wise. Sorry, I was thinking about Bob Odenkirk being in a previous episode.
Yeah.
Where I was
his
just
agent,
marveling.
His agent
about,
is Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah, marveling at about just how Saul Goodman he was. No, his lawyer is also from Twin Peaks. He's Laura Palmer's father.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought it was always great of him and
Artie
talking to the lawyer every time, and it would be like, no, I'm telling you, trust me, I'm telling you the truth, and it would
I'm
never
telling you everything.
Yeah, even to the point where like he's writing her the check, and the lawyer says, don't write her a check, and he says, I'm gonna write her the check, and it was kind of fun that all of that stuff was happening off screen and just kept being like, here's the updates. Was kind of, I didn't care for the Hank storyline of him trying to sell a racy story about himself, I guess, to take the bullet for him.
Again,
for
it was a running joke. You knew where it was going. You know, I knew that he shouldn't be talking to a reporter about stuff and that it was going to backfire. I wasn't sure exactly how, but the sort of like, things are falling apart because Hank tried to tell me all these things. You know, I was like, okay, that's fine. It's fine. Yeah,
fine. It's fine. The butt cream stuff was very good in the Beverly episode also. the intern showing up in the middle of the shoot and like, here's your butt cream. It was so good.
Yes. Good stuff. Larry Sanders never disappoints. Even when it's not my favorite, never disappoints. So looking forward to watching some more. Anything else on Larry Sanders?
No, that's it. I'm glad we're doing this. I had seen Larry Sanders once before, but it was many years ago. So it's kind of reliving the experience.
Yeah, it's a nice little nostalgia trip on top of being just really good stuff. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. We wish Brian Brushwood a speedy recovery from his cold, and we wish all of you a not ever getting a cold or flu or virus of any kind. Thank you for supporting us, patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll see you next time.
Time. Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.